Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about how to use a podcast to grow your business.
Should I say take two? Since this is our second attempt at recording this.
It is. You know, what's funny about this is that, and this is just kind of behind the scenes, I've been using Riverside and it's been rock solid for the last 4 months. And then all of a sudden I've lost the last two podcast interviews, including this one, which we're recording again. And so I literally just canceled it. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
I can't deal with it.
So I don't know what excellent advice we gave 5 minutes ago, but we'll have to start over on using a podcast to grow your business. So there's two different ways you can do this, and we'll talk about both today. The first being creating your own podcast, and the second being going on other people's podcasts to promote your business, product, services, website, YouTube, whatever it is. I will say that we already have a podcast on how to actually do a podcast, all the technical stuff and supplies you need, things like that. But so this, we're going to talk more about how that you use it to grow your business on this episode. So you started the My Wife Quit Her Job podcast when?
I want to say 2014.
Okay. So you've been doing it a long time, 9 years. Do you think, I know it's hard to measure the effectiveness of a podcast as far as statistically, but what would you say your podcast has done for My Wife Quit Her Job?
Let's just say that when I go to an event, people always know me for my podcast and now more recently, actually the YouTube channel.
Uh-huh.
And not the blog as much, right? Because
no one
it's
reads
hard
that
to
anymore. Come on now.
You know, that I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly like no one leaves any comments on the blog.
Right. That's all sure. That's changed a long time ago. I think one of the things, and this is what we did talk about in version one, is that a podcast gives you a little bit of legitimacy. I compared it to writing a book. You bit my head off and we've moved on from that. We've said we're sorry. But I think it's similar in that you can use the podcast to introduce yourself, leverage relationships, things like that, because it gives you another thing to lean on as opposed to just having a website, just having a YouTube channel, just having social media, something like that.
So this is what we were talking about. You mentioned a friend
who
has a podcast about being a slob or not being a slob.
A slob comes clean. So it's basically like, if you're a slob, how do you, and we're talking like hoarder level, how do you get your life on track to not have that level of mess?
Yes. And then you mentioned that she had Mel Robbins on.
Yes. Or maybe she went on Mel Robbins, but she did something with Mel Robbins in podcast.
Yeah, and I was just talking about, you mentioned legitimacy.
Uh-huh.
If you do an interview-based podcast and you get someone pretty big on the show, then people will tend to associate you with that person, which gives you extra legitimacy.
Yep. And the other thing is, and we talked about this too, if you think that your topic isn't podcastable, you're probably wrong. There are podcasts about absolutely everything. One of my daughter's friends told me the other day that she found out I had a podcast and she's like, what's your podcast about? I love podcasts. And she's 19, which is to me interesting because 19-year-olds do not seem like a podcast demographic. But both two of my kids listen to Joe Rogan religiously, right? Like they're huge Joe Rogan podcast fans. And she was telling me she listens to a podcast about reality TV stars. So it's not even the reality TV stars doing the podcast. It's people talking about the reality TV stars and whatever drama is going on. So, you know, anything from sports to business to, you know, home economics to science. I mean, the true crime thing has just blown up, right? So I think no matter what your genre is that you're writing about or creating content about, you can find a space for a podcast there.
So your kids don't listen to this podcast?
I've banned them from it. So, I mean, I don't even think they know I have a podcast, but.
Yeah, so the reason why I started the My Wife Quit Her Job podcast wasn't for fame or any of that stuff.
Well,
I just wanted to meet people. And it's funny, oftentimes, at least this is maybe something that's with me, but I feel like I need an excuse to talk to someone for like an hour. Like you wouldn't go up to someone that you don't know that well and say, hey, let's hop on a call and talk for an hour. I mean, maybe you can pull that off, but I
could probably do it, but it's not something that I would relish doing.
Yeah. So the podcast is like the perfect excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'll expose you to my audience. You come on, we'll just talk for an hour. And then what's cool is like after you hit the stop button, you end up talking, you know, for a while longer about more personal stuff. It's a really great way to get to know other people.
Yeah, definitely a relationship builder. And that is really accurate if you have an interview-based podcast. You don't have to have an interview-based podcast to grow your business. One of our friends, Shalene Johnson, her podcast is just her talking 90% of the time. I think sometimes she does have people on, but it's not terribly common. She does a lot of podcasts just by herself, but her podcast fans are raving fans, super loyal, you know, and so she's grown her presence because she doesn't really have a great website. It's not, she's not producing tons of content on a static set of pages. She primarily works on social media and then through the podcast. And I think, you know, you can absolutely grow your business doing it solo. But I would say if you are thinking about doing a solo podcast, you're probably not as funny or as smart as you think you are. So, and I'm not, we could go into a whole debate about scripted podcasts because I know you did a scripted podcast a while ago.
I did.
You had to write out the whole script. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I think at least you need to have an outline. Most people cannot riff with themselves for 20 to 40 to 60 minutes. So I think just as far as creating really great content, you want to have some sort of an outline if you are doing this solo.
You know, Shalene, I'm pretty sure Shalene, she probably has an outline of some sort, but she's just so good at riffing.
She is so good at riffing.
But she can just talk for like an hour and it's very interesting.
Yes.
I am not blessed with that talent. So I started doing solo episodes. Did I tell you this? You probably already knew.
Yes, I did know this.
Family First Friday. So Fridays is when I go solo. And compared to an interview-based podcast, those episodes take me forever.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because one, I have to talk by myself. It's not like I'm having a conversation with you. Like this podcast is like no effort at all.
Uh-huh.
Mainly
but
because you can carry the conversation.
That's very disrespectful. It takes a lot of effort to put up with you every week to record.
But to do a solo, it's almost like recording a video.
Yep.
Except for me, for some reason, it's worse.
That's interesting. I'm positive I could do a solo podcast because I never shut up. However, I think that in order to have a great podcast when you're first getting started, you just want to have an outline at least. Have some talking points. You know, if I was doing this episode by myself, how to use a podcast to grow your business, I would have 5 points in front of me. And I would probably just talk through those 5 points. I probably wouldn't have much more than that. And if you want to do something where you script it out even further, I think you need to practice reading it in a way that doesn't sound scripted. You need it to sound like it's very fluid. It can't sound like you're reading a book.
Yes, actually, incidentally, that's why doing the audiobook for my book was so difficult because they needed me to read it verbatim.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that. So yeah, I would never probably script everything out verbatim for a podcast.
Yeah.
Just have some bullet points, like you said, and just riff on it.
Now, we do have a podcast talking about Steve trying to riff his book. So if you want to go back a couple episodes, it's all everything you need to know about an audiobook, recording an audiobook. But it's a very funny one. You can hear about Steve's experience. So let's talk a little bit about your script, because I think maybe one of the hurdles, there's obviously like the technology hurdle holding people back from starting a podcast, which we've talked about in another podcast episode. But I think one of the other hurdles people face is, I don't know what I would say, right? So you did this scripted podcast a while back on someone else's show. It's not how you run your show.
Correct.
Talk a little bit about that experience, because to me, that was absolutely absurd. But I understand why the person does it. So talk about pros and cons.
Do we talk after I recorded it?
Because you know, I don't know if we
sounding,
did.
It ended up sounding great. Like I went off script.
Okay, of course you did.
Just because, you know, what you have down there is just, I treated it like an outline.
Yeah.
And it ended up sounding perfectly natural and good. But yes, I think the reason this person does it, and we'll let you know when the episode comes out, is because of quality control. Like if that, this person has a big podcast.
Yeah.
And if you have a guest on, you don't want it to just be a disaster. I'm sure like this person's interviewed like 5 times more people than I have.
Right.
And I'm sure he's had his share of disasters. And just by having the script there, it basically ensures that it's going to be a good episode.
Well, and I don't think we've talked about this. If we have, it was a long time ago. But you actually had this happen to you where you interviewed someone for a podcast and they were awful and they didn't have any information and they were promoting something. And when you started asking them pretty basic questions about the details of what was happening, they didn't have any statistics. And you ended up stopping the podcast, right?
I did, yes. Okay. It was awkward. Yeah.
What were your exact words? Why don't you come back when you know something?
I said, hey, why don't we stop it right here? And why don't you go ahead and just gather the data? Mm-hmm. And then maybe we can, you know, reschedule this, is what I said.
And then
Something you never rescheduled. And then we never rescheduled.
But I will say, if you are doing interview podcasts and that's how you want to grow your reach, you probably want to do a little bit of vetting. You just don't want to let, because we get pitches all the time like, have this person come on the podcast. And it's like, you clearly haven't listened to our podcast. We never have anybody come on the podcast. So to me, that's like red flag number one. It's like, you, this person would be a great guest. Well, we don't take guests. We only have our friends come on as substitutes. So, you know, problem number one. But then two, you want to make sure they've had a little bit of vetting before you bring them on and take time out of your day and schedule to record. You do this mainly by inviting people that you've already met. So you might meet somebody. Exactly. You can talk about it. You meet somebody at an event and you schmooze them.
I mean, I don't even need to schmooze them. It's just if it's someone I like, I'm like, hey, you want to come on the pod?
Yeah.
And then they usually say yes, especially if we've had a conversation.
I know.
And that's it. And you can tell when you meet someone in person. I mean, it's not always the case, but if someone's a good conversationalist, chances are they're going to be good on a podcast.
Right. And I think
that hasn't always. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's always outliers. You're always going to get a dud or someone that maybe you thought was going to be okay and they just killed it. Right. There's always these outliers. But I think in general, meeting people in person, having a conversation with them, or maybe on a like a Zoom call or someone in your mastermind and then thinking, oh, this person would be great to have on the pod, that's a really good way to vet people before you start recording.
Yeah, for sure. And in fact, the only there's been a couple of times where I've never met the person, uh-huh. but like there was one time where it was like someone I really looked up to.
Uh-huh.
You probably know who I'm talking about, but I'm not going to name any names. I really looked up to this person, had him on the pod, and I was like, it's probably one of the worst interviews I've ever done. But I published it anyway.
They can't all be me. It's tough.
Yeah.
So when you were first, so this is probably a question people have. They want to start a podcast. It's a great way to meet people, get guests on. But when you're first getting started, it's probably significantly harder to get guests. Now you have a top 25 podcast on iTunes with the My Wife Quit Her Job podcast. Most people would want to be invited on because it's really good promotion for their business. But if you're in the beginning stages and maybe you have 100 listeners a week or 50 listeners a week, which is great, you're still above most podcasts if you can hit 50. How did you do that initially when you were getting started?
I think for me, it was a little bit unfair because I had the blog for 5 years.
Uh-huh.
So I just kind of leveraged upon the blog and I said, hey, I've been running this blog. And then I just, my first 10 guests were friends.
Okay. But I think that's a good strategy no matter what, is pick people that you already know personally.
Yeah, like Andrew Udarian was episode number 2.
Okay.
Episode number 1 was me.
Yeah.
In a solo episode. And then I think I had Neville, Billy Murphy, just a bunch of my buddies who just happened to have audiences themselves.
Okay.
And I think early on they helped share those initial episodes, which gave it a little jump start.
Uh-huh.
So are you asking that question like starting from complete scratch without knowing anybody, or?
I mean, everybody knows somebody.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this the other day. If you wanted to do, let's say you're doing this reality TV podcast, right? And you're actually going to interview reality TV stars. Just started the like F level stars, right? The ones that are clamoring for attention. Maybe you have let's talk about Dana. She has the cleaning podcast. Maybe you start by talking to a cleaning company person or someone who declutters or someone like those people that come in after people pass away and they like set up the estate sales and things like that. Like those people are very happy to give interviews, even if they don't have any idea who you are, because they don't have an audience at all. And so anything that they would get from you would be valuable as far as, you know, promotion, mentioning, you know, their service or product, things like that. So everybody knows somebody. And if you're already in the space, and you don't have to be like this, you know, long-term content creator, but you probably have connections in your niche.
I mean, here's a good angle that I just thought of as you were talking. Like, this cleaning company probably has a client list, right?
Yeah.
And if you did one, an interview where it really highlighted like their strengths and whatever, they might actually want to share it or use it as like a testimonial.
Yeah, right?
On their site, which could kind of jumpstart things for your podcast.
So yeah, I think even if you don't know a lot of people or you don't have a established website, you can get going. You can also, you don't have to have every episode be an interview episode. You can start by doing one with just you, one with an interview, you know, alternate back and forth, or two by yourself, one with an interview, you know, until you get going. And so I think there's a lot of options there. You don't have to, you know, have 55 of your best friends lined up when you get started.
I mean, early on, I was pretty scrappy. I remember I used to stalk the people I wanted to have, and I found out who their friends were, you know, just on Facebook, who they're linked with. And I saw if I knew anybody who was linked with that person. And if not, I would just kind of work my way up the chain and interview people along the way until I had a bunch of people that knew that person. And then I would ask those people to ask that person via email all at the same time whether they wanted to come on my podcast.
Yeah.
Because they just did it. I can't remember. I had a name for this method. The ambush method.
Yeah, you did. Oh my gosh, we talked about it in like...
Oh, did we?
One of the very first episodes of this podcast, we talked about... How you, I forget what it's called though. Yeah, you definitely had a nickname.
I had a name for it, which I can't remember what it is right now because I haven't had to use it in a while. But I think Ryan Dice, I used it for, like, I had five people email him at the same time.
Yes.
And he was like, whoa, what's going on here?
Who is this guy? People stop spamming me.
And it worked. So
here's the other thing. You know, so, you know, you didn't have a true connection with Ryan Dice, but you wanted to get him on the podcast. That's going to be everybody who's just starting out. They probably don't have a true connection with some of the bigger names, maybe not Ryan Dice's level, but even like, you know, a medium big, right? You promote the heck out of that podcast after it airs. That's the thing. If you're going to start getting people on, you want to put it on social media. You probably want to put it on your website. You want to make the show notes awesome. You want to do all the things that you can to promote that person so that they feel like it was a positive experience, because you don't know when that person might connect you to the next person. Like, hey, I want to, you know, who knows if, I mean, I don't know Ryan Dice, but maybe he said, someone else is like, hey, you know, this guy, Steve Chu, wants me to be on the podcast. I noticed you were on the podcast. And he would say, oh, I went on that podcast and I got all sorts of leads or whatever, you know, whatever it might be, or traffic to my website or interest in my product or service. So when you do get a guest on, make sure that you really promote that heavily so that people see that you are trying really hard, not only to promote yourself, but to promote them.
Here's the other thing that you can do, and this tactic's been used on me many times. When people ask if I want to go on their podcast, and if I notice that it's like a small podcast, in their verbiage, if they say, hey, I had your buddies such and such and such on, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, reputation, reputation by association.
Exactly. It just works so well. And so all you really need is like one person to come on, then it's really easy to get other people to go. It's kind of like when you're running an event and you're trying to get a bunch of speakers, you can say, hey, I've already nailed down these.
Right.
And actually, Sam Parr of The Hustle, I don't think I would do this, but what he did was he got one person and then he told all the rest, the guests that he wanted to get, he said he already landed them in order to land the rest. And then so he went back to each person once landed someone, and he ended up getting all of the speakers that he wanted to.
So that can backfire on you, because that happened to me when I was speaking in the homeschool circuit. One of the homeschool sites put me up on their page as a speaker, and they hadn't reached out to me. And I was livid. Because I was, and it would have been one thing if they would have used it to get other speakers. That's fine. But they used it to sell tickets, right? So they were like, oh, but I hadn't even we hadn't even started talking about me speaking for them. So I was like, not happy about that. So I wouldn't, That's not a method I would use to the public. Behind the scenes, sure, I don't think there's a huge issue with that. But I would tread carefully on things like that when you're starting out, because you don't want to get a bad reputation.
Yeah, actually, this other guy did the exact same thing, because he asked me to speak, and then he said, hey, look at all these other people that I had. Mm-hmm. I just happened to know like two or three of the people on that list. So I emailed them and said, hey, I noticed you're speaking at this event. Yeah. Is it any good? And then they replied to me like, I'm not speaking at any event. No one asked me at any event. Like,
yeah, that's exactly. And I think that's how I found out about it. Someone's like, oh, you're speaking at XYZ. And I was like, what? No, I'm like, I was like, I don't even think I'm around that date. It was very strange, but yeah.
Yeah, it turned out that event never happened either, actually. Yeah,
so just out of curiosity, how many of our Seller Summit speakers on the webpage are actually coming?
What do you mean?
Or did you just put them up there to get other people to speak?
Of course they're all coming. What are you talking about? What?
Because you're saying, like, create a fake speaker page and then tell people.
No, I was talking about this person who added me to their face. They were trying to get me to speak, yeah.
You didn't get my joke.
Sorry, I didn't get it.
It's okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
So I think the other way you can get people is, and this is a good one, I think. I'm just totally pat myself on the back there. But I get pitches all the time for people that have written books or done something that they're trying to promote, and they want to be featured. And as you know, you just wrote a book. You probably wouldn't have turned down a lot of podcasts at this point to promote.
Actually, I turned out a bunch.
Most people, not you.
Well, no, it's because a podcast takes like at least an hour of your time.
True. But if someone, let me rephrase that. If someone doesn't have the built-in audience like you do, they are not going to be nearly as picky about what shows they go on, who they do interviews with, how many YouTube videos they make, whatever. You had an audience, so you could afford to be pretty picky with the podcasts that you went on. But you went on way more podcasts than you've ever been on in your life.
It's true. It's true. Absolutely true.
4 months.
Yeah.
So I get pitches all the time, and we get this for Profitable Audience. It's like, hey, so-and-so just wrote this book on marketing or something in our niche. They'd be a great guest for your podcast. There are a lot of people out there that don't have a big audience, but they've written a book or they've done something where they're looking for some traction. And those are great people to start with because they're very eager. So typically, and not always, they could be a terrible interview, but for the most part, they're probably very well prepared, very well rehearsed, and can be a great way to get some interviews in the beginning when you don't have a lot of audience to start with.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? Maybe we should switch gears and not talk about interview-based podcasts. Like, how would a solo episode help you grow? Like, we talked about Shalene. And Shalene's just interesting.
What?
And she's got funny stories.
She does. She does. I look forward to her stories, actually. But I don't think... So Shalene is interesting. She also provides value a lot. She has topical podcasts. She has some where she just riffs. But there's a lot of them are like 10 ways to break through a mindset, whatever issue, or how to find Instagram reels that are successful, things like that. She does have strategy-based podcasts in her repertoire.
That's her other podcast. I think that's her Build Her Tribe podcast. On Shalene, it's mostly just her riffing, right?
No, there's a ton. Like, she just did one on like weight loss. She's done several on fitness. She has a lot.
Oh, yeah,
mindset.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, it's just not quite as strategic on her show other than the Build Your Tribe. But there's a lot of people who have solo podcasts that are educational or informative. I think the what I would not do, unless you are already a stand-up comedian, is try to just have a riff podcast. Most people are not entertaining enough and are not versed enough in just radio, basically, to do that. But, you know, I think a great one, some of the ones I used to love, like, I think he still does this, but Neil Patel and our friend Eric did that, like, 3-minute.
I think they still do it.
I think they do.
It's like 3 minutes.
Yeah, a 3-minute tip. That podcast was the bomb. Like, I used to listen to it all the time, like, oh, I've got a couple minutes to kill. What did they talk? And I'd look, kind of scroll through some of the topics, some of the stuff I didn't care about. But, you know, I would listen to that pretty regularly. And it's how I became way more familiar with Neil Patel. Now, he did it with Eric, but he didn't have to. That could have been a solo podcast easily. Or sure. Eric could have done it without Neil. They didn't need each other. They just worked together. So I think you could do anything from like those short tip podcasts. There's all these podcasts that I see, like Daily Affirmations, right? They're like 1 to 2 minutes long. There's a lot of mindset or just tips. I was listening to one the other day on like organic food or something, you know, something with like clean eating and things like that. And it was a solo person talking through some of the, Jillian Michaels, I think. Is she the Biggest Loser coach?
The name sounds familiar.
She was doing one, on raising certain levels in your body based on the things you eat and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do solo that you don't need to interview anybody for, especially if you're the topic expert.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. You know, it's funny. I had this conversation with our mutual friend, Andrew, and he thinks the solo episodes that he does are way easier than his interview-based ones. And I was like, how is that possible? Because like one of the reasons why I do interviews-based podcasts, aside from the fact that I actually want to meet people and get to know them, is the fact that it requires very little prep.
Right.
Right? Like you can just go in. I could go in with zero prep and barely even know who the person is and still put out a pretty decent interview just because, you know, out of curiosity. And he was telling me that it's so much harder to do an interview-based podcast. Whereas with the solo ones, he just turns on the mic and he just riffs. And he used to be a radio host, so maybe that's why he can do that.
That's not a fair...
Yeah, maybe that's why.
If you're a radio host, you talk by yourself all the time usually.
Exactly.
You're a pro. Okay. But I think you can definitely do solo episodes. I think you need to put a lot more prep in them when you're first getting started, unless you are a former radio personality. And I think over time, this is the thing, it's probably harder over time. It's harder to do a podcast by yourself initially, but over time, it's probably easier in that you get so well versed in it and you don't have to deal with guests, right? So there's pros and cons to each. But the other thing I wanted to talk about is if you don't want to start a podcast because it's not your thing, but you're doing something, launching a course, launching a product or service, launching a book, you can go on other people's podcasts to promote, promote your product or service, book, whatever it is. So you just did this. You blitzed the podcast world. Let's talk first of all about the benefits that you saw from it.
I mean, the benefits are, it's hard to measure, but I just noticed a lot more traffic. I've noticed a lot more email signups. We sold some tickets, I'm sure, to Seller Summit as a result of it. I guess that's not the interesting part. The interesting part, I guess, is how you get on them.
Right.
Right. And I think it all has to do with networking.
Uh-huh.
Everyone who I approached was someone either I knew directly or they were friends of a friend who could introduce me.
Uh-huh.
And again, like we've probably talked about this in the past, but this is why going to live events is so important. Because everyone's large podcasts are people who I've actually met in person, who I've actually hung out with. Now, I'm not saying that you need to go out and meet everybody, but at least you have to have a connection with them, or you need to have accomplished something pretty big to warrant, you know, going on the podcast. I'm just looking at my body of work.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that I would have qualified for a lot of these podcasts just based on that, right? But the fact that I knew these people and just over the years have allowed me to get on them. And here's the way I think about it. Like you might meet someone and you might not get to know them that well the first time that you meet, but just the fact that you meet or have met, they know who you are, and that just is a huge leg up. And you never know when someone you meet will either help you or you can help them in a certain way. Like some of these people that I went on the podcast, I hadn't talked to for years, but they knew me, and so they were willing to have me on.
Well, the other thing is about what you talked about earlier, when you meet somebody who knows the podcast person. So,
right.
Yeah, that's another reason to get out there and network, is that maybe you don't know the podcaster, but you know one of their close friends, so you can ask for a recommendation. If you don't have as much many connections because you're newer, how would you do this?
See, I think almost everyone knows somebody
who
has connections, right? And it's just a matter of getting out there. And ask, see, here's what I do. Every time I'm done with someone interviewing me, I'll say, hey, do you have any friends who have podcasts that would want like a middle-aged Asian dude on the pod? You know, also. And a lot of times they say, yes, same things when I interview someone else. I ask them, hey, is there any other interesting people that you think I should have on the show that maybe you know? Just asking that very simple question can go a long way. So no, I totally agree. If you do a good job promoting the podcast that you're on, trust me, the podcast owner actually notices this. And that actually ends up getting a lot of brownie points. Like when someone promotes a podcast, like they've come on my podcast and they put it all over social media, I noticed that right away. And so if they were to ever ask me for something going forward, I'll think to myself, hey, yeah, I remember when I had this person on, they promoted the heck out of that show. I'm going to go out of my way to help this person because, you know, they did their job in helping promote my show and they really added a lot of value. So just little things like that make a huge difference.
Yeah, we talked about this in one of the How to Meet People. I think it was the How to Meet People episode. If you want to go on a podcast, you should probably leave a review. You should probably listen to a couple episodes. Don't be like the people who email Steve and I that want to be a guest on a podcast that doesn't have guests. Do a little bit of research. Be educated, especially if you don't have a strong connection to those people. If it's very like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon style connection, you want to make sure that they don't think that you're just out for yourself.
Here's the other thing too, like if you do your research correctly, sometimes you'll notice that someone's show that you're trying to get on is going through like a different season in life or something. And if you just say something specific in your outreach, like, hey, I just listened to your last episode on this. I'm going through the same thing right now. Would you like to talk about this? Like I have such and such, you know, whatever. Like I'll give you an example of this. So Rick Mulready, He runs like an advertising podcast. And typically, I don't go on these types of podcasts. But I asked him, and he just happened to be going. He just had a kid, and he's actually going on sabbatical right now.
Oh,
because
nice.
He wants to focus more on family. And so it gave us like the perfect subject line to just kind of riff on his podcast.
Yeah, and I think that's where having a basic understanding of the people that you're reaching out to is really important. And I recommend not like looking at their last podcast, dig back a little bit so it shows a lot more interest. I'm curious, who's the hardest person that you, what was the podcast that was the hardest to get on for you? Can you say that out loud?
I don't know actually, because I'm not really good at these cold pitches.
Uh-huh.
Like literally for this book, I went down my list of everyone who I've ever had on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
And I also went down everyone who I know,
uh-huh,
at least even as an acquaintance, and I just emailed them. And
yeah.
The way I led with it was like, hey, I'd like to just send you a book.
Uh-huh.
And if they replied to that with an address, I was like, okay, great. And then I waited. And then I said, hey, you're interested in having a middle-aged Chinese guy on the podcast to talk about family and business? And that worked.
Yeah. You can't use that line if you're not middle-aged Chinese. Just
that's true. Yes, you can't use that line.
That's a very specific pitch.
But I'm trying to think, if I didn't know those people, I would definitely find people who did.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, like my book launch coach actually knew a couple of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then my editor knew a bunch of people. And so the way I always lead with that is I offer to have them on my podcast first.
Okay.
Because if I ask to be on their podcast, and uh-huh, even with a warm intro, they don't know who I am, right?
Yeah.
Like even with warm intros on my podcast, I'm not really eager to do it because I don't know who they are, even if it's a warm intro, unless it's from a close friend.
Right.
So I have them on the podcast, and usually we establish rapport on the podcast, and then I mention my book, and then I mention, hey, are you looking for a guest on your podcast? And it's much harder, like even if they don't want me on the podcast, which is possible, it's much harder to tell me to my face that they don't want me to have my podcast when we're on Zoom.
Say it to my face. So I think the other thing people need to remember is that don't pitch Joe Rogan as your first person to interview on. Don't pitch Tim Ferriss or Shalene. It's start small and get practice getting on podcasts as a guest. You know, pitch people who don't have a lot of reviews, but you enjoy what they're talking about and it fits your niche. I think a lot of people think like, oh, I'm going to go all out on this. I want to pitch the, you know, biggest people. Bad idea.
Yeah. I mean, I made those mistakes early on, you know, trying to pitch myself, randomly. It doesn't usually work. And so, and sometimes when you do it randomly and you get denied, that might prevent you from ever getting on, right? Because you'll remember, okay, this is like this cold pitch. And it, like if you're persistent in like a bad way, like I tend to remember that. Like if someone emails me 10 times, which has happened, to come on the show and I don't respond, and I see that person again, even through a warm intro, I just have this bad taste in my mouth. I don't know.
People have emailed you 10 times?
Yes. Well, you know, like even for Profit Alliance, we get pitched all the time.
Yeah.
For My Wife Quit, I get pitched every single day, like multiple times a day.
Yeah.
And it's usually from these people who, that's their job, right?
Yeah. They're just their publicists. They're pitching.
Right. But they're very persistent.
Yeah.
Well, and so it could be the same person.
Based on, there's incentive there for them to annoy you.
But it's a huge turnoff when you pitch the same person like 10 times.
Yeah.
So
as someone who just did a flurry of podcast interviews to promote your latest endeavor, what's the number one tip that you would give people as we wrap it up?
Well, to promote my book, I would say the number one tip, if you're going to be on the podcast, I would go on like the smaller podcast first and practice your pitch for whatever it is you're going to say. Because even though I've read my book 25 times, I didn't really have like a cohesive set of things that I was going to say. So I kind of practiced on some of the smaller podcasts, mainly with friends who had smaller podcasts where I felt completely comfortable, even if I screwed up. And that way, when you get on the larger ones, you're much more polished. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.